You're listening to 101.5 FM on UMFM. In today's episode of UTalk, I got to talk with Elder Dr. David Corshane, an executive producer of Kedjik Productions, Erica Daniels. We'll also listen to some awesome music from local musicians Lisa Muswagen and Helen Back with a performance from the Ethnic Music Concert Series by U Multicultural. Manitoba 150, in partnership with the Turtle Lodge International Center for Indigenous Education and Wellness and IG Wealth Management, released a series of vignettes in English, French, and Anishinaabe, carrying the lessons of the seven sacred laws. Dr. Corshane is a respected elder who has devoted himself to learning the knowledge and traditions of Indigenous people. He says the true identity of the First Peoples is reflected in a foundation of laws and values known as the Seven Sacred Laws.
My English name is Dave Corshane, and I'm from Sagging First Nation, and I have the responsibility of taking care of a place that has become very well known, the Turtle Lodge. You know, it's been a place for healing for many of our people, but we've extended, you know, the invitation to other people to, you know, to join us in the protocols that we follow when it comes to seeking healing. So my work has been primarily teaching. You know, I've led a lot of ceremonies in my life that have been handed to me by, you know, by spiritual leaders. And so I was very happy today to, you know, to launch, you know, what we call the seven laws of Anishinaabe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how about you tell me a little bit about Turtle Lodges and your involvement in this project?
You know, the Turtle Lodge was received through a vision, you know, and built in my community in Sagging First Nation. And, you know, I've always been so proud to say that it was the young people, you know, that had helped materialize the vision I had of this lodge that I received on a vision quest. And it was built in 2002, and it has become recognized as a place of healing, you know, for many people. And the other thing that's very important for me is that the lodge represents something that is very important, and that's our autonomy, you know, as a people to exercise, you know, our way of life. Because today, you know, we still govern from cradle to grave with a legislation called the Indian Act. And I would rather not be governed by that legislation. And when we built the Turtle Lodge, it was to help us again to, you know, to find our own identity as a people. And we were very fortunate that we still had knowledge keepers that had maintained that, you know, the language, the ceremonies, and the teachings, you know, of our ancestors. And I also, you know, like to acknowledge those that, you know, during the time of Prohibition, they went deep into the forest and practiced those ceremonies, and, you know, high into the mountains, and continued to light the sacred fires and sound the sacred drum, you know, because the drum is a gift that we believe carries, you know, our hopes and our prayers to that higher realm of spirit. So the lodge, you know, has become very important to many of us, and today we're still learning, we're still experiencing more of the beauty of a way of life of such a beautiful people. You know, there isn't a day that I don't wake up and thank the great creator that I was born, you know, to be an Anishinaabe. And I know that many of our people today, you know, have not had that opportunity, you know, to even learn, you know, their identity, you know, because the approach by government has always been to assimilate us in just about every segment of programs that they, you know, implant in our communities. It's is still with the original intent, and that is to assimilate us. The Turtle Lodge has, you know, become a place where we exercise our right to freedom, to, you know, to exercise that right to be able to use the gifts of our ancestors that helped them to sustain life. And just as important is to bring back the protocols that are needed in establishing a sacred relationship with the land. It's not only about going to the land, but, the, you know, rekindling the spirit of that relationship with the land itself. So the Turtle Lodge has had far-reaching impact on many people. Today we're, you know, we're getting calls from all over the world that, you know, our messages are slowly getting out there. And one that is of common concern to, we find, is the whole issue, you know, of climate change. And, you know, people, particularly the scientific community, is beginning to recognize, you know, that indigenous people have something to contribute here in terms of finding ways to have a much better relationship with the land itself. And we do have those, you know, those teachings that that can help us to, you know, to develop a much more respectful, sacred relationship with the land itself. And when we built the lodge, you know, it was through the labor of love of young people. And there were other people that had heard about the vision of the lodge, and they came and helped us. No one got paid to build that lodge, you know, and I think that's why the strength of the spirit of the lodge is so strong, because, you know, it was done out of faith and belief in the dream of the lodge itself, that we needed a place. And to us, you know, the turtle for us has always been a symbol of truth. You know, in our language, I've heard many elders make reference in the language that the Turtle Lodge, they call it Tebwegamik, a lodge of truth. You know, and to, truth to us, of course, are these seven teachings, these seven laws. And you have to live all those laws in order to really find and live that truth that we're all looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the building of this lodge and projects like these are an opportunity for our First Nations to reclaim an identity that was stolen and nearly lost. You know, with the news of those 215 children, those are 215 individuals who never had the opportunity to embrace their culture, like you said, because of assimilation.
And I think, you know, that was the most difficult part for me personally, and I'm sure others, you know, that it hurt to, you know, to hear the story of the uncovering of these 215 children, you know, because I know we all love our children, you know, and I know we all do. It has nothing to do with, you know, with the diversity of humanity, but as parents or aunties, uncles, or grandparents, we love our children. So anyone with a heart, I think, would have felt the pain that many Indigenous people who were the relatives of those, you know, that had to go through that experience. And we have a way of life, you know, that helps in the grieving process. And I think that's what's important here, is for those, you know, to remember amongst our own that we have ways and means, you know, for ceremony to deal with the grieving. And I met with the National Group of Elders a couple of days ago, and they've called for a day of prayer on Sunday, you know, to be able to lift the pipes and, you know, to help share in the grieving of our relatives. And more, and just as important, to remember of the children today that have not had that opportunity to learn about their identity. And there's been many of them. You know, today we see so many children, you know, that have gone into foster care. And many people have made reference that it's just a repeat of the boarding school, you know, situation. So we have a lot of work to do, you know, and I know that, you know, as spiritual leaders of our people, you know, we tell our people we have to start taking responsibility again. You know, we've got to break out of the state of dependency that's been created by government. You know, that we have to take full responsibility for our children. We have to take full responsibility, you know, for a way of life that we need to share with the rest of our relatives, you know, that have arrived on our homeland. And I know that these challenges out there are great. You know, there's a lot of challenges, and it's going to require people, you know, that can find the courage to be able to set aside the differences and say, you know, we're going to have to think of the children here. You know, what legacy do we leave our children? What footprint do we leave them? You know, do we leave them a footprint that they can have a future? And from what I'm seeing, you know, is that we're spending the inheritance of our children if we continue to exploit the land to the extent that it's being exploited, you know, with the minerals, the forest, the gold, everything, all of that, you know, and then it's always at the expense of the ones that are most vulnerable are the children. You know, it's always to be the children that suffer the most because of adults making these decisions, you know, which I think many times are somewhat selfish decisions. And, you know, we've arrived in a time of great change, but also a great, you know, a time of great great opportunity to the change. It's going to require human change. You know, we talk about climate change, but I think we're going to have to change. And I think with the releasing of these vignettes, I hope that that will open a door, at least, you know, to engage in some discussions together. You know, peaceful discussions, you know, respectful discussions, because, you know, as long as we continue to protest and, you know, engage in confrontation, we're not going to get anywhere. And I think that it's going to be the knowledge keepers of our nations that should take the lead in the process of this whole concept of reconciliation, you know, that they define a real way, you know, how we can reach a level of kindness as humanity, you know, that, and allow the elders to fulfill their role, and, you know, that they do the ceremonies that need to be done, you know, to seek spiritual guidance and help. And, you know, there's spiritual ways all around the world, you know, that people, you know, engage with their belief system. And we have a way also, as a people, we've always believed in the Great Spirit. And we know that we haven't got the intellectual capacity to be able to understand the fullness of the Great Spirit. Much of the Great Spirit is a great mystery. And the most that we can do as human beings is feel, you know, what this Great Spirit is. And it's all about an energy of love, to show love, to be kind, is when you really feel the presence of that higher influence of life itself. You know, so you hear these things in these lodges, you know, the knowledge keepers are talking. And, you know, to share one really quick teaching with you of creation, you know, in every living entity, there's a shining blue light. There's a shining blue light inside of you called spirit. And it's that shining blue light that defines your identity and who you are, your gifts. You know, all of the good things that you are is within you. And the elders say you have to go within yourself to find yourself. No one can do that for you. So we engage in these rites of passages with our young people, like the vision quest for the young boy. And that's how I received, you know, the Turtle Lodge was that rite of passage of a vision quest, you know, to go out to find a dream and give me a purpose and meaning to my life. And once, you know, the vision arrived and my life became really full, I had lots to do in order to make this happen. And we all have a dream. We all have a purpose. We're here for a reason. But there's also the collective responsibility that we have as human beings, you know, first of all, to treat each other with kindness and respect. And the other thing that I think is very, very important at this time is to become real stewards of the land, you know, to really protect the land, to take care of the land, you know. And if we can give support to the young men today to go on a rite of passage, to feel the land. And I think if they feel the land, they're going to take better care of it. If they can hear the voice of the land, you know, it's almost magical. You know, when you allow yourself to experience that, and that's been my experience, you know, being on the land. Yeah, I was afraid at night. Everything became multiplied. The sound was greater. And at nighttime, I began to realize I'm not as big as I think I am.
Yep, yeah. It's a real eye-opening
And
experience.
it's universal. You know, why would we not revolutionize the whole education system and include the rite of passage for our children to experience the land and, you know, to be led by those like the knowledge keepers of our people to guide them and to answer the questions that they have. That's all these young people want. They have questions. They want somebody to answer them. And that's what the elder's role usually is they'll answer, they'll answer those questions because these kids have a lot of questions. But we haven't given them the opportunity. Like even this time of isolation, surely we can find a way, you know, to make it safe, like particularly the elderly, you know, to go out on the land and to be with the land by the river, by the lake, and, you know, make it as safe as possible so they can feel, you know, feel the land and feel the breeze of the wind. And hear the songs of the birds, you know, because it's all about life. It's about life. I remember this elder telling me, you want to learn about life? And I said, I sure do. And he said, well, come with me into the bush and I will teach you about life. And it was a profound statement, but it was true. You know, so, you know, given what was released or uncovered, you know, it's a continued sad story. You know, and we have to do something, you know, to engage in much more peaceful ways of changing, you know, the environment of the world that we live in. And I don't necessarily put faith in the politicians, you know, to make those changes. I think it's going to be people like ourselves, you know. Yes, absolutely. But that person's got to have that faith and, I think, allow themselves to go and engage with the land, you know, begin there. And I've said many times, you know, that I've been told by the elders that we will never become men until we're initiated by a woman, you know, and that initiation began with my mother, my grandmother. And then when I went on a vision quest, I went to the mother that is a mother to all of us. That's why our people of reference, you know, the earth as Mother Earth, it's a feminine entity, you know, of life. So it's, you know, we have a lot to give and we have a lot to share. And we just should, you know, which I feel is really important, was the foundation of our way of life with these laws and teachings that we shared this morning.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on just the significance of, you know, featuring these teachings and sacred laws, like these vignettes, as well as, you know, our youth today, you know, embracing their culture and history on platforms like social media. What do you think is the significance of, you know, sharing our First Nations culture and history in this new age of storytelling?
You know, I've asked a question, you know, to the elders about that very question that you're asking me. And the response that they have given me, which I support, is that we must take every opportunity that we can with the new media, the new technology to share. The only thing, of course, we can't share is the actual ceremony. You know, that's a totally different thing. But I think in terms of, you know, a lot of the knowledge, you know, like the seven laws, you know, something that can be shared. And, you know, I will use whatever is available for me, you know, and to do it feeling good that, you know, that is a responsibility that I have, you know, to share, you know, the richness of a people that, you know, that we do have something to contribute, you know, to creating a better country and a better world. You know, so I welcome all of that. The only thing is, you know, the elders have made it very clear that our ceremonies are very restrictive in terms of, you know, being filmed and all of that, which makes sense to me. You know, that's a spiritual exercise that you're going through. So the spirit is, you know, is something that, why, how can you film it when you can't see it anyways? So, you know, that's just out of respect, you know, that the elders treat respect to that high degree of respect.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So you've been talking a lot about, and these vignettes feature, the seven sacred laws. What are these? What are they?
You know, when you look at the seven sacred laws, you know that these laws were with our people for thousands of years. It has only been recent, you know, on a quest that I went on a vision quest, that these animals appeared and claimed, you know, the, you know, that these laws were laws that they carry, you know, that they had a responsibility to share with the human beings. You see, people have to understand that, you know, the animals preceded us. And, you know, the animal world, the plant world, you know, follow a natural lifestyle. And us as human beings, we're given this gift of the mind, but we lack the knowledge. So that, you know, the animals were always there. And really what that represents is the relationship that we have with the land that is the real teacher to the animals and the birds that are there, you know, to bring forward these teachings. Like the first law that we were given was the law of respect by the buffalo. And people would say, well, what is respect? And respect is to know how to give, because the buffalo gave every part of its whole being so that our people would survive on the plains. And then, you know, something tragic happened when millions of buffalo were slaughtered, you know, on the plains, and the people started to starve, because the animals that they depended on were not there anymore. You know, because the animal was there to teach us how to give. And it has always been absolutely critical and important in indigenous life, is to give. Because that's our currency for living, is to give. You know, Native people have a hard time to build large deposits in the bank. As soon as they get it, they usually spend it right away. But it's all about that whole spirit of giving. And then when we talk about, you know, the eagle, you know, it came forward, you know, to claim the teaching of love. You know, of course, everybody, that teaching of love is universal. Poets have written about it. People sing about it. People talk about it. And the reason why, you know, the eagle gave of itself was to show, you know, that you cannot live, you know, exercising love without the spirit to be free, to be who you are, to be freely expressive of the love that you have. And when we watch an eagle up, you know, in the sky, and it's gliding in a circle, and something tells you within yourself, I wish I could be an eagle, because you want to be free. You want to be free from all that's tearing us apart as human beings. And the eagle is a very sacred bird to our people. And the eagle represents vision, because it really flies high into the sky. It's a symbol that when we go on a vision quest, we call to the spirit of the eagle, help me get a vision. Help me. You know, and the eagle, you know, is all about it was all about love. And we can write books, and I've read books upon books about love, you know, and many have written about it, because that's how important that it is. And then the third law that was given was by the bear, that said, I will bring courage to the people. I will teach you courage. And this is one really difficult one to live in today's world, that to have the courage to do the right thing. You know, and if you watch a bear naturally, like the mother bear will defend her child. You know, she will die for that child, that cub, because she has that courage to defend or to take care of her child. And, you know, to really know what courage is about, you know, is to be able to show, you know, that love for each other. And courage basically is doing the right thing that's expressed from your heart, not your head, but your heart tells you that you have to, this has to change. And then you hear your heart, your spirit speaking to you. And it takes a lot of courage to try to implement what your heart is telling you. And I'm sure you've had your experiences in life. Your mind is telling you one thing and your heart is telling you another.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
We've all had those experiences, and honesty was brought by the one that we call Bigfoot, which was really to be honest, to speak truth from the heart, and we were never to lie, to judge or condemn others, rather speak well of others, knowing their uniqueness. And it's interesting, when the elders say one of the biggest compliments your community can give you is that there goes an honest person, and you're attracted to that person. If you say that's a dishonest person, you don't want to be too near that person. But someone that's honest, you want them to be close to you. You want to talk to them. You want to be near them. That's a great honor when the community can say, there goes an honest person. And the elders will identify a lot of times, that's who the honest people are, that you can depend upon, to be honest with you if you want a deal and, you're looking for help and answers. And wisdom, that was brought by the beaver was to know that each and every one of us as human beings have gift. Like you, for example, you were given a gift, which is, to understand wisdom. To understand wisdom is not book intellectual knowledge. Wisdom is to know who you are and is to know your gifts, but to take those gifts to serve humanity, to use those gifts to build a better world, just like that. The beaver uses its teeth to build a dam. Think about a beaver in the natural world. If that beaver is lazy and he sits on the side all day and his buddies are doing all the work and his teeth grow long and they grow so long he can't eat anymore and he dies because he's lazy. Well, that's what happens to us a lot of time. We get lazy and don't want to work. So how can life be fulfilling? So we got to use our gifts. So that beaver, we need the beaver more than ever today, to be able to use our gifts, to create and build a better world.
Yeah, with in a world where we have access to all the knowledge of time, all at our fingertips, some of it always in our pockets. Yeah, we really need that wisdom to really take that knowledge to apply it to fulfill ourselves and make the world a better place.
Absolutely, and I think that that's what I mean by this great opportunity that they were being given. These teachings are being revealed for a reason. It's not a coincidence or an accident. And when we talk about humility that was brought by the wolf, it's not that we are all equal in the eyes of the great spirit, and showing gratitude every day for life received, that we shouldn't wake up in the morning, as we begin to breathe and say, God, I'm still alive. Feel good about that. And you hope that you can live and walk in a good way that day. You follow the sun. The sun is the clearest physical symbol that there's a great spirit. So he walks across the sky and say, do you remember those teachings? Ah, I taught you. Then you fall. But you're always, it's never too late to change. So you get back up and you try again. You just keep, because it's a lifetime experience. And then when we talk about the truth, which is represented by the turtle, she's one of the oldest animals who has, seen life evolve. And really to live truth is to walk all the seven sacred laws together. And I know that today in my heart that these seven laws can act as a foundation for anything we want to create that can build a better world. That's why, what we did today is, it's been a lifelong journey for me, to share these teachings in the way that we've been able to, to share today. And I know that, we don't claim full, that we have all the knowledge and all the wisdom. Nobody does. I think we have a part of, something that is important that can contribute, to create a better world.
One piece in a larger puzzle.
That's exactly true, and we need to learn that, that all of us have something to contribute. If we can see humanity in the sense of, that we're all related, like you're my brother, and to reach that level, and some have a difficult time doing that, there's a lot of people that just refuse to even consider that, that understanding.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again for taking this time to share your truth, share these sacred laws with me. and for others to hear them.
Yes, thank you for this opportunity again. You know, I appreciate you asking me, and it's my pleasure, you know, to share what little bit that I know.
We'll hear my conversation with Erica, but first, here's the performance by Lisa Muswagen and Helen Back.
Story he shared with her to take back home to the community. Now that album that I tell the story is titled Buffalo and Rabbits, so I'll leave it up to you to find the rest of the story when you download the track, because all the songs on my album are all story titles, so you'll see how it ends when you check it out. But there's a couple more, two more songs that I wanted to share with you before I close off. I wanted to show you the story, because in our culture we have traditions and we have legends that talk about the creation and how things came to be and whatnot, right? And my grandfather was from Norway House, and his name is Myrtle Scribe, and he told legends of northern Manitoba. And so I wanted to carry on his legacy of storytelling by making Buffalo and Rabbits. And so it's a very important story that I hold close to me that hopes to inspire and inspire the teachings that were passed on to me that I can share with you. The type of singing that I do is called, it's called drumming, and there's two types of it. There's traditional drumming, but I do contemporary because I've added in some instruments and do my own type of style of singing. But what I've come to do is mix some of my music with current music, like hip-hop and rock and whatnot. So they're nice experiments that I like to do. So for my next song, what I want to do is I want to bring on my husband, who is a hip-hop artist. And he's a well-known hip-hop artist in Canada. And the song that we want to do is titled My Native People.
My Native People, my DNA to people. Treated second string to the people in charge of them steeples. Religious attributes regurgitated among heavy reservation to avoid the fact we struggle to be deemed lower class and segregated. Tribes destroyed and separated. Women and children forcibly fornicated. Harper issued an apology on behalf of the white people to whom Witchy is related. I bet they're feeling vindicated, like saying sorry will wash it all away. Like every sin that was committed against my ancestors can be blamed on the priest having a bad day. Blame it on the error. I don't buy that one bit. Because the things that I'm speaking on happen still present day life shit. Stories still swept under the rug that colonialism has provided. Youth dying at alarming rates and will never know the joys of buying a car and racking up the mileage. Whose stories stop before they can understand growing up's true meaning. For the ones who will never experience the reality of true feelings. This is for the tribal members watch other tribal members dying, protecting their family from the hate and all the lies, from the elders' pain we will never fully understand until we see it through their eyes. This is for the brothers and sisters who stand fist high on the front lines and were greeted with mace and rubber bullets in the place of handshakes and highs, water cannons in winter to try put our cold voices on some cold ice. I'm never afraid to walk alone, because every step is a path that my family can follow. Because if I don't go first, how can they gauge if the puddle is deep or if it's shallow? The better tomorrow is buried underneath hard work, blood, sweat, and the other. And sometimes you have to separate yourself from the pack. Like head down, focus on music and not a skin color or even the steps of your past brothers. Stay to yourself, quiet, humble, kept, but also on target. Like the one that's put on your back as soon as you place product on the market. This is for those natives who hate other races, not understanding that whenever they do that, it's reverse racism on everybody that's standing in front of them, man. For the ones who never made it. And I don't mean the big leagues. I mean the ones who froze in the woods trying to get back home to their mom and family. Peace.
Thank you. So that was my husband, Helen, back. Feel free to check that song out too. You will find the music, just look us up and we're there. But the last song I wanted to share with you is actually something that's going to be released very shortly, so I wanted to be here for the first time that I wanted to perform it. And it's a song, it's about celebrating life, so I wanted to close that off and sing it for you and out there. That's what the lyrics mean. I'm going to be using my language, the Cree language, and so here it goes.
Although this project was the vision of Dr. Korshan, it takes a creative mind taking that vision and visualizing it into a reality. executive producer of Kedjik Productions, Erica Daniels, walks us through her journey into media, telling Indigenous stories and her involvement in the creation of the Seven Sacred Laws vignettes.
Ani Buju, Deni Maginituk, and Amiki Makwai Kwain Indigenakas, Niganin Makinaki Kwain Indigenakas, Wabazi Dodem, Peguis Donji. My English name is Erica Daniels, and I'm Cree Ojibwe from Peguis First Nation. I am a filmmaker, a producer, director, and writer, and I have a production company called Kijik Productions, and I am the writer and or co-writer and director of the Seven Sacred Laws.
Fantastic. So what got you involved in media? What made you want to become a writer and a filmmaker?
So, well, as a kid, I've always been a really creative child and a storyteller, I guess. I used to always, you know, write my own stories or make up my own little stories. I also remember using like my grandma's camera recorder and like making little films with my little cousins and my friends and stuff. So it's something I was always really passionate about. When I was 16, though, I joined a program called Just TV at the Broadway Neighborhood Center here in Winnipeg. And it was a program created for at-risk youth in the inner city of Winnipeg. And so I joined that program, and that program really, it really changed my life because I found a space where I was able to express myself in a creative way. And I used that medium to really heal from a lot of my own personal struggles. And not only did the program teach me about multimedia, well, through the program, I learned video production, audio production, and storytelling and all areas of multimedia. But, you know, I also was able to connect with my community through that program and, you know, connect with elders within the community. And that's where I was able to meet Elder Kershane and start attending the Turtle Lodge. And that's when my life really started to take a change, is when I started reconnecting to my culture and to my identity, you know, and building pride in who I was by seeing the true beauty of who we were or who we are today. And that, you know, how the ceremonies that we have and the values that we live by. So, yeah, that was kind of the beginning of my journey.
Yeah, that's something we've definitely been seeing in the past couple of years. Influencers on social media kind of reclaiming their culture and history and sharing it and bringing it to life, to light again.
Yeah, for sure. I think using, you know, social media and you know, platforms such as those, like, and using media is the best way that we're going to be able to reach the young people, because that's where our youth are. Our young people are all over social media. And if we have a message, that's the best way to kind of reach them, especially in this time of a global pandemic. You know, I think young people are looking for that, you know, guidance and even just feeling that spiritual connection through a time like this is so important. And so that's why we're really excited about sharing the Seven Sacred Laws series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was speaking with Elder Dave earlier, and he was just saying he and other elders are really into the idea of using new media as a means of, you know, bringing back a culture that was on the verge of extinction.
Yeah, for a long time, it's recent that, you know, we were actually outlawed of practicing our cultures and attending ceremonies. So, you know, it's the fact that, you know, we have to take advantage of being able to, you know, reach out to our elders and learn about the ceremonies, the songs, and the languages, because for me, that was my healing. That was how I healed from my past. And I know that that's going to be like a way for other young Indigenous people to also, you know, reconnect to who they are, but also heal from any sort of traumas that they've been dealt with, that they've been dealing with. Because again, just in the times that we're in right now, especially this week, it's been very hard for our community, and the grief that we're feeling in the discovery of those 250 bodies of young children in the Kamloops Residential School. And, you know, that's only the beginning of the findings, but, you know, right now we're in a time of grieving and, you know, looking for something, looking for hope and, you know, moving, looking for hope. And so I really feel like the Seven Sacred Laws is something, you know, like the timing of it, the releasing of it. I don't think it's a coincidence. You know, it's meant to be like shared in this time for people to look to, remembering of where they come from and who they are as Indigenous people, but also a time to learn about, like, for non-Indigenous people to educate themselves about, you know, who Indigenous people truly are and the histories and the hardships that we have to go through, but also the beauty of who we are. And I think the Seven Sacred Laws really, you know, shares that of who we are and what our values are. But they, you know, they're, and they're also universal laws for all people. So that's what we really hope, is that, you know, the message will be unity with the sharings of these vignettes.
So what was your involvement in this project, and why was the vignette medium chosen to share these seven sacred laws?
So I was the director and also the co-writer. So this was Dave's vision. This was a vision. This is a real story about his own experience with going on a vision quest and these animals coming to him. And for me, you know, because of my connection to the Turtle Lodge and learning from Dave over the past, you know, 9-10 years, you know, I'm honored that he trusted me in guiding these stories in a good way and making sure that, you know, that they were respected, and that, you know, that his story and his vision was honored. So we chose to do vignettes. You know, each episode is 2 to 3 minutes in length. And I really think that's the best approach, especially when we're gearing it towards a younger audience. Attention spans are very short these days, and so people are looking for content that is quick and to the point. And so we did our best in trying to take all this knowledge and all these teachings and compress it into 2 to 3 minutes. And that was a challenge, but I think we did a very good job on making sure that they still had the impact and that the strength of what's being said by these animals. But again, like, having them as vignettes just made the most sense when we were trying to, you know, have them online, easy access, and for people to learn quick, and especially our young people. So another thing too is that we really hope that it will start conversations, and that people will be encouraged to seek out Indigenous elders within their own communities and start, you know, asking more questions and learning about their own creation stories or their own teachings within their communities that they're surrounded by. So, you know, it's definitely it's an opportunity to start more conversations about, you know, learning about Indigenous people and their history. But also, you know, for non-Indigenous people to learn more about who we are, but also for our Indigenous communities who have been so disconnected because of, you know, colonization, for us to be able to have a beginning point and a starting point to relearn our cultures and our histories.
What advice would you give for new budding First Nations children and youth who are wanting to become kind of the next generation of storytellers in new media?
For young people who are interested in, you know, being storytellers, whatever way that is, you know, writing your own books or making your own films, or, you know, just being present on social media and sharing your story, like, it's so important right now, because for so long we've been silenced and our cultures were taken away from us. And so we're in a point where we're the ones who need to take that back. We need to ensure that we're taking that upon ourselves, you know, to end the cycles of, you know, intergenerational trauma, and, you know, take the knowledge from our elders, because right now, you know, a lot of our elders are, you know, they're leaving us, and they're taking that important history and that important knowledge that they carry with them. So, you know, using media is such a great way to be able to capture those teachings and share it in a wider way. And then one part I forgot about that question, but like, just in like message I would say to them is, you know, every single one of us has an important story to tell, and we're the ones who are going to be able to best tell our own stories. You know, for so long we've had people from outside of our communities coming in to tell our stories, you know, but it's our opportunity now to tell our own stories, because we're the ones with the lived experience. We're the ones with that connection to these stories. So, you know, people need to make space for the next generation of Indigenous filmmakers. We have a lot to say, and, you know, I believe that we're on the right track, and there's so many up and coming, inspiring Indigenous filmmakers and storytellers out there. So, you know, I can't wait to see, you know, what our community is going to do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, historically, media has been dominated by that Western perspective. And only in the last kind of couple of years, we've started to see more programming and media focused towards immigrants and newcomers and the diversity found here in Canada. Do you feel there's a changing in perspective and more interest in terms of First Nations media?
Yeah, like I'm noticing there is a change, but I do believe we still have a long way to go. There is, you know, more advocacy for Indigenous filmmakers and more, you know, like more diversity on film sets that's taking place, which is good to see. But at the same time, we have a long way to go. And I think that what needs to change too is like allowing us the space to tell our stories the way that we want to tell our stories, because, you know, we have our own approach of telling our stories. And so, you know, non-Indigenous people who want to work with us, like, collaborate with us, but also give us the space and the opportunity to tell our stories from our own perspectives. Yeah, I do notice that there is more of an interest. Although one thing that I dislike is that it's kind of like a niche, right? Mm-hmm. A niche is what they're calling it. And I don't like that because this is our life. This is who we are. And, you know, I wish it was more of a content that people were looking to, because I do feel that like Indigenous people, like being the first people of, you know, of North America, like, we have a lot to share, you know, not only with about like our values, but also like our connections that we have to the land and the teachings that we carry about how to live in this world in a good way and protect the land. You know, just with thinking of like everything that's happening in the world, you know, I really feel like our people are our true leaders, our knowledge keepers, our true leaders. And I wish like the media and, you know, that there was more space for Indigenous people. And then when we talk about the media as well, like I still feel like there needs to be a lot more support. And like just in the way that stories are told, they're not honored the way that they need to be, or they're not portrayed in the way that they need to be. So there is a lot of work that needs to happen, although there is some stuff that's moving forward, but we still have a long way to go.
You mentioned how stories are portrayed in media. What can the media do to more accurately, you know, share these stories or portray it in a way that our First Nations and Indigenous populations want?
I really wish that there were more Indigenous people like within the media industry, but also like again, like allowing us to tell the stories the way that we want to tell them, you know, and not you know, trying to fit their agenda, but allowing us to tell stories in a true way, because, you know, media just they don't tell the truth like it needs to be told. And so I feel like a lot of people are still silenced in that way when there's stories that are on that hit, you know, the media, that they're still misconstrued and things that are taken out that are very vital, important parts of the stories that are being shared. So, I mean, if we had more representation within these industries, I think that would be a first step. But like, you can bring on more diverse backgrounds, but you need to allow space for them to fully express themselves and share their stories from their own perspective without, you know, someone higher up saying, oh no, it needs to be like this or it needs to be like this. You need to give us permission. Actually, no, we need to take that and like, it's not about even taking permission, but we need a platform in order to tell our own stories the way that we want to tell them without anybody telling us what we can and can't do, can and cannot do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. Is there anything else that you would like to share just in terms of this project or just the work that you're doing in your own kind of career?
Yeah, like for me, being an Indigenous storyteller is, you know, something that I'm very passionate about in sharing our history and sharing the healing that's taking place within our communities and sharing the knowledge of our elders. It's so important right now, especially like that our elders have a voice and that we're listening to them. Also for our young people, so that they have the opportunity to learn from our elders, but also just. Oh, I'm getting lost here. This is like probably like the sixth interview I did today.
I get it. I get it.
Yeah, but no, I just like, for me, like, this is so important, you know, to, for the opportunity for our elders to be heard. And yeah, and just for an opportunity for the young people to also, you know, okay, wait, hold on. I got it. I think also, like, to see Indigenous stories on large platforms is a way to inspire young people as well, because there's not often where you see Indigenous people on these big networks or big platforms. And when you do, you know, you almost get emotional as an Indigenous person, because you don't see that. You don't see Indigenous people in lead roles in movies. You know, it's only now that we're starting to see, like, Indigenous people on news networks and stuff like that. And it brings so much pride and happiness to us, because we're finally seeing our people being recognized and celebrated. So, you know, having these seven sacred laws available to, you know, young people all across all platforms, I think is really gonna inspire them and spark something in them to wanna reconnect with who they truly are and learn about their culture, learn about their histories and you know, build pride in being, like, and living their true identity.
Yeah, representation is incredibly important. My girlfriend, has a Filipino background, and mm-hmm. just seeing individuals of, like, Southeast Asian descent in media, like, just seeing that look on her face and how excited she gets.
Yeah,
like, and, like, for, like, our youth growing up now, like, for myself, like, all the heroes and action films, yeah, they're all people who look like me. Like, yeah, now we need people for our next generation. They need to see people like themselves so they can be inspired.
Exactly. Like, for me, like, whenever I see Indigenous people, like, right, like, recently we actually now have two, are you in Winnipeg? Yeah. So, like, there's more hosts on, like, CTV's really stepped up in bringing on more Indigenous representation. And then, what else, like, even just, like, in politics, you know, seeing people in parliament and stuff like that, like, I'm a crybaby, so I cry, like, every single time I see somebody in a leadership role like that and being recognized and celebrated by not only Indigenous people but by all people. It's emotional, because it's growth, and you see that, and, like, I don't know, it really sparks something in you when you have those role models who are doing those things and paving a way for other young Indigenous people.
If you'd like to watch this series, you can find it in English, French, and Anishinaabe on the Turtle Lodge YouTube channel. Tune into 101.5 FM every Tuesday afternoon at 1 to hear more stories and music from fantastic people across Canada. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk, and have yourself a good one.